Podcast Impulse. Hello and welcome to this breaking news episode of What Most People Think. In a week where there was a coup where number 10 sort of organised a coup against itself. It was a mad old development where they briefed that Wes Streeting was going for it and then he said he wasn't. And then the net effect was, as some people put it, that Keir Starmer somehow appeared to have stabbed himself in the front. You know, people normally get stabbed in the back, but the Starmer operation stabbed itself in the front. Unbelievable developments. We'll also chat about economic news, unemployment up, growth decreasing, and a budget coming. So I think we've all seen how this... I mean, it's sort of like the British economy is like one of those horror films where they go, let's just hide in the old house on the... on the hill. It's like the Blair Witch Project, isn't it? Let's keep walking further into the forest. Oh dear. But anyway, we'll get to all that in a moment. As we talk, it is Thursday and it is just coming up 11 a.m. and I've got a show tonight at Leicester Square Theatre. And it's a really weird one. It's at 9:30 p.m. That's by far the latest time I've ever started a tour show. And I'm a bit conscious of how it might be atmosphere-wise, because I would imagine if you're coming to it, you've probably gone, well, let's meet up at 7, right? And let's have dinner. People will probably be a bottle and a half of wine in, maybe 6 pints. I reckon the first half of this is going to be the spiciest gig I've done in a long time. And I also think that, you know, middle-aged blokes, their bladder is about the size of a fucking walnut. So I'll probably have to call an interval after 20 minutes just because everyone is going back and forth to the toilet and not for rock and roll reasons. But yeah, if you wake up on Friday and hear that a riot broke out at a gig in Leicester Square, then you'll know why it happened. Keep your piss take prices coming in. Either use the hashtag piss take prices or email whatmostpeopleThinkUK@gmail.com. I'm not going to do them all the time. I want to let them build up, you know, get some really interesting ones out there. I just one accuracy. I don't want to be throwing any companies under a bus for things that they haven't charged, but also context. And I've tried to think of a good example. £7.50 for a cheese toastie on an EasyJet flight is both expensive but not a piss take price, because you kind of go, well, yeah, it's a flight. Like, this is what they do. They charge you £7.50. You wait forever. You feel like you've been forgotten. And then they bring you a thing that is so unbelievably hot, your whole holiday is ruined by the roof of your mouth basically disintegrating, right? But £7.50 at a greasy spoon, that would be a piss take price, because it's all about context. But do keep them coming in. I think WH Smith's, you're done, mate. Like, if people and Pret, WH Smith's and Pret, the public are not happy. If anybody from these companies listens, you have to find a way, right? You might have to give the shareholders just a little bit less, because people, but just look at the queue at Greggs. That's all I would say. At any given point, just look at the queue at Greggs and weep. New patrons. Remember, if you're a patron, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. Ideally, if you could sign up through the Patreon website or an Android device, creators get more of... It doesn't affect what you pay, but creators get more of that money. If Apple is the only one, by all means, do Apple. But just, yeah, the other two, if possible. And you get the podcast early, ad-free, bonus content, and other things. I'm trying to work out how to do this autumn a couple of live episodes. So I'm going to... Patrons, stand by your beds. I'm going to... give you a shout soon to try and work out where the majority of you live, and then obviously those events will be free to patrons. But thanks for everybody that's joined up. Richard Bicknell, I think Richard's a returner. Richard, Richard Bicknell. I can't help but think about Martin Bicknell, the Surrey seamer, who I think was out of the wilderness of Test cricket for a long time, then come back, took another couple of wickets in the first innings, and then was gone again. So I don't know, you Martin Bicknell, Richard Bicknell, are you one of the Bicknell cricket in dynasty? You are very welcome back. And we also just get a Richard, and we always say usually that if people don't give their surname, it's because they're working for a woke institution and they don't want to be named. However, this week I think maybe Richard, you work for Keir Starmer, perhaps. Maybe he's just hiding in shame. Maybe the name's not even Richard. Maybe it's Morgan McSweeney. By the way, I've got this thing. I reckon that if you work for Labour, right, and you're pissed off with Morgan McSweeney, who is, I think, the director of comms staff or one of those Alistair Campbell type, Art of Darkness type positions, I reckon just to slowly undermine him, you should start humming the theme tune to the Sweeney. when he comes in the room, just go, just McSweeney, McSweeney, da, 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 da. Just do it. Just get in his head. Just bully him. Just tease it. McSweeney. Because he sort of does have something of the 70s cop about him. You know, he's not playing by the rules. He's banging heads together. Just try it. Just see. He might cry. Also had a letter as well. People really loved the episode with Rachel Fairburn from earlier this week. So do join in. Do listen to that. And I had a message. So there was Rachel told a story of an impulse purchase while she was away of a small... Anyway, you got to listen to it. It's very weird what she bought, but she posted it back to herself. Danny has got in touch to say, I thought you might like this blokey equivalent to Rachel posting a pottery dog home to herself. A few years ago, I was touring France on a motorbike and found a full-size, high-quality replica of Aragorn's sword from Lord of the Rings at a price I couldn't refuse. You could have done. I mean, you're a grown man. Let's be honest. I'm guessing it was in... I'd love to know the price. Just tell me, email me. I'd love to know the price because I'm betting any money it's still in the hundreds. Not only is it a sodding great sword, I love this, very old-fashioned language here, a bit unwieldy on a motorbike. Yeah, I mean, a guy on a motorbike with a sword down his back, you think, what's this, some sort of reincarnated crusader? But I didn't fancy my chances of explaining it successfully to customs at a Dover ferry terminal, so it was a post-it home job. I love the way you say that, as though that's what... I just did what any normal person would do, I posted the sword home. No, that isn't what most people do. It says... Danny says it still didn't make it through customs. Yeah, well, why not? You know, I mean, you know, they'd maybe come and interview. Maybe they just come. Maybe you just got to prove to them that you're a massive nerd. How many bloke points do I win? You do. I mean, yeah, motorbiking, swords, of course, that's blokey points. But also, this does score quite highly on the nerd index. But yeah, Danny, if you've ever just bought something weird and posted it to yourself, whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com, or of course, patrons can contact me through the site. What most people think. The thank you. I don't know if I was, did I mention it with Rachel, but the gig in Newcastle Sunday night was unbelievable, man. And that, you know, that sold out despite being at 8:30 on a Sunday, and Newcastle's always been good to me. So I'm going to look at, we're pretty much signed off on another Newcastle date in April, and also Norwich too. That went on sale. That sold out pretty much faster than any date I've ever had on sale. So look out for that. In terms of tickets on sale in 2026, let's give a little hype to some of them. Remember, you can go to Live Nation and get your tickets. I'm buying time here while I'm opening the folder I should have had open. Wimborne, Bournemouth, selling well, but a big room. Stockton, I'm going back to Stockton. I remember last time I went there, it was after James Cleverley was alleged to call it a shithole. But I remember there was a bit in the news. It was really funny. It was someone from Stockton where the BBC said to him, like, what do you think of this? And he said, well, he shouldn't have said it out loud, like. it didn't even dispute it. Spalding, going back to Spalding, Ipswich, Corn Exchange, Derby Theatre. What a venue that is. What a hidden gem that is in the East Midlands. Can't wait to get back to Derby. The Castle, Wellingborough, Cheltenham Town Hall. Had a nice time there last time. The Town Hall in Wickham. Looking forward to going back there. Royal Spa Centre, Leamington Spa. Old Fight, Carlisle. You're on last warnings here, Carlisle. Seriously, it's a long fucking way. We're done, mate. Do not go down the road of Aldershot. You don't want to be the new Aldershot who were the new Leicester. The Atkinson Theatre in Southport, going back to Southport. Crewe, that's a big room, but it started well, but there's room for plenty more. Shrewsbury as well. Shrewsbury on a Sunday. Always had nice turnouts there. One of the newer dates, Redruth, Taunton, Brewhouse, The Limelight in Belfast as well. Always have good fun in Belfast. Then there were the new dates in Solihull, Coventry, Portsmouth, Winchester, Ilkley, Lancaster, and as I say, Norwich has sold out, and Chorley is getting close to being sold out. So get involved. Oh, the fuck you this week is to myself, because I don't want to, right, let's get the violin out, but I don't think I've had more than 5 or 6 days off in a row this year, right? And there's a reason for it. You know, one is that I'm a fucking legend and a hero to my family. But his comedy's going through a bit of a change. So part of what I did was always like appearing on stuff, podcasts, touring, writing. Writing used to be a big part of what I do, but, you know, as you'll have seen, comedy entertainment has fallen off a cliff. There are way less panel shows. The new comedy formats, brilliant though they are, they're not the kind of things that you write loads on. So it's been going through a bit of a change, and while that's happened, I've just, you know, said yes to everything. And then you get the dad guilt, don't you? You have to think where you have to go out and work on a Sunday, which is never... Look, the tour show, luckily, in Newcastle was amazing, but I don't even think you have to be a Christian or religious to just... There's something fucking fundamentally wrong about getting in your motor and driving in the rain on a Sunday. Maybe I need to do a John Lewis ad about myself, you know, just the heroic things that dads and mums do. But then what happened was, right, this is the way that, maybe this is male mental health perhaps, but I was looking at next year, and the definition of madness is doing the same thing expecting different results. And it was a little holiday in the second week of April, and I was sort of thinking, oh, if we just make it a 3-dayer rather than a 5-dayer, I could get back to do that. And I was like, you're fucking doing it again, Jeff. So next year, I mean, obviously I've got Christmas coming up, so that'll be good. But next year, for the first time outside of the Christmas period, I'll be taking a full week off in April. And even still, my brain is still going, you fucking slacker. All right, let's talk politics now. We're going to start with not the best economic news. So it came out earlier this week. I mean, every week in the life of this government feels like an eon. You know, like how some insects only live for a day, so you think, wow, that must be their whole lifetime encapsulated in that. This is the Labour government are essentially a sort of like doomed butterfly. But unemployment is up to 5%, right? So it was 4.1%, I think, when they took office, and it's kind of gone up every month. And you know, if one of the fears about this Labour government, or indeed any, is that, well, they'll just spend more, raise taxes and leave office with unemployment higher than it was when they got in. And all of those things are happening. And it was tricky because, you know, PMQs, as I've said, do tune in. It really has gone from meaning nothing to sort of beating the drum of the news cycle. I mean, the turnaround is so massive. It wasn't that long ago where everything Kemi Badenoch said, Keir Starmer would just patronise her that way that he probably doesn't realise quite sexist. I mean, the Honourable Lady should know. I mean, just have a seat, love. And he was patronising her. His MPs were laughing at her. And my, it's changed around. I mean, he's at times a bit of a spluttering, you know, Starmer, he sounds like he's sort of glitching, right? And she obviously went, as well as on the failed coup, she went on the unemployment numbers, which, you know, which we'll focus on now. And what he does, so he'd done the maths. Someone had done the maths for him, thinking this is bad, right? How do we put some sort of spin on this? And he said, well, you know, during the period, during the 14 years, which now gets like almost a bingo call laugh when he says that, you know, the party opposite had an average unemployment of 5.4%. You go, well, first up, it just sounds a bit weak that you're kind of having to go across a 14-year period. But, you know, when they took office, it was after a global financial crash. And I think unemployment was around, David Domain will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was around 8%. I mean, it got quite high, maybe 10, maybe not that high. And then there was, of course, a pandemic where Starmer and his party were frequently arguing for more lockdowns and for the economy to be more closed. And the problem is, as well, is, you know, is it will go up more, I think, during the life of their government. And, you know, with the welfare bill is already too high, what if you, like, add to it? I mean, it's just this spiral is worrying with welfare, which we'll get onto in a sec. But and then I think the national insurance rise clearly had an impact on unemployment. They were warned exactly where the jobs would go, right? Everyone was saying retail and hospitality, and the numbers suggest that is exactly where they've gone. Not even AI, by the way. I mean, Jesus Christ, if it was sort of like they said, oh, it was, you know, lawyers getting laid off or the knowledge economy, you go, oh, we're starting to see AI coming through. This is just like, these are jobs that only human beings could do. So what's going to happen, right? They're going to switch it around. Probably they're going to realise their mistake and they're going to say, right, it would be Rachel Reeves that says it. So Rachel Reeves will probably say in a very angry voice, we're going to rescind the NI rise and then we're going to stick it on income tax. But the problem with that, right, you know, it probably is the option that they have to take. I don't know, but they will leave themselves open to criticism from the left, which essentially is you're giving employers a tax break while taxing the workers, which for a Labour Party, to find yourself in that situation, if they'd done the income tax rise at the beginning, people wouldn't have thought of it in this way, but now it's how they'll look. And also as well, I mean, just finally in this section, 4 million now on universal credit. I know some of that is because people are coming off other benefits, but I think now that it's basically 28 million people who work and raise taxes versus for 28 million people who don't. And, you know, some of those are old, retired kids or whatever. But I do think that we need to, if you work and you're you're paying tax. I think that we should, I think we should just do a general strike. At some point, the Taxpayers Alliance are going to become like an actual political party. Let's talk about growth now. It slowed. It was predicted to be 0.2 or 0.3%, and it's 0.1%. And then actually, I think it was negative in September, which sort of suggests a direction of travel. And, you know, it's really difficult for Labour because their big thing was, you know, don't worry about freebies or what, whose glasses I'm wearing. Angela Rayner, Mandelson, Sue Gray, focus on our number one mission, which is growth. Well, that's going to shit too. Okay, so you're in a problem here. What are they eventually going to have to talk about? Keir, eh? Breakfast Club. Ugh. I mean, they said judge us on the medium to long term, right? Well, they're now a year and a half into their term in office, and the medium term is coming up, right? The medium term will happen at the end of next year, right? That will clearly be the medium term. And the medium term is looking like shit. I don't want these podcasts to be depressing, just an assault on this Labour government. But how can you not, if you're looking at politics this week, how can you not look at this sort of triumvirate of really bad things? Two of them economic, one of them internal party management. And what is the answer, you know, to this economic doom loop? Well, the answer was cut spending, cut the welfare bill, right? But they're terrified of their own. How can you be terrified of your own massive majority? It's like having a giant penis and being terrified. Well, maybe it would be quite if it was giant. I don't know. But I mean, I do know. I absolutely do know. So, they're running scared. They tried to do what most people thought that they should do on welfare. And there was a potential rebellion. They weren't willing to work with other parties like the Tories to get it over the line. And so they've gone the other way. And I think in the recent past, they've also had their own internal review, which conveniently says that, I don't think we need to do anything on the welfare bill. You couldn't make it up. Sorry, I'm sounding more tabloid and populist, but you really fucking couldn't. And the problem is like, you know, as I've said before, Starmer going, Reeves going, I think that is the difference between a bad thing, you know, a very bad thing being a terrible thing. I don't think like, I don't actively want them to stay. But equally, I can see that if they went, the alternative is likely to be more left-wing, it's likely to be more spending, it's less likely to want to cut anything, and it'll all get worse. So look, listen, rather than depress ourselves, let's cheer ourselves up with this absolute shit show of a bungled coup plot from Number 10. Okay, so there's a slight Freudian slip there. I said coup from Number 10, and it wasn't, was it? It was a coup against Number 10, but it, ultimately, that's what it felt like. It felt like just somebody. You ever seen the film Liar Liar, where Jim Carrey is he's in the toilet and he's trying to beat himself up so he doesn't have to go into court because he knows that he'll tell the truth there, right? And he's punching himself in the face. That's what they're doing. He's punching himself in the face, and then someone goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Should be obvious. I'm kicking my own ass." That is where Labour at now, right? Because certainly the Number 10 operation. Because it emerges late on Tuesday night that there's a plot. There's a plot afoot. There's a plot. Wes Streeton is on manoeuvres, which I don't fully dispute, but maybe it's not that immediate. They're going to try and get Starmer out before Christmas, before the budget, before the end of the week, before PMQs. And some say that it was like completely coordinated. Some say it was out of, you know, people close to the PM trying to protect the guy. The problem is like it's such a fundamental admission of weakness, isn't it? Just to say it out loud, isn't it? It's like accusing another guy of sleeping with your wife when they weren't. But we go, all right, what I now know is that you're paranoid and your marriage is shit. And this is so farcical this week. It's mad. Do you remember when Liz Truss was like, do you remember there was that night in the Commons where they tried to whip the MPs to vote one way and then they realised they were going to lose and they whipped them the other way and then there was that chief whip woman, she was crying and Liz Truss was hugging her and it was all going tits up. It's not quite there, but fuck me, it's on that trajectory. And Wes Streeton was out on the morning rounds and the hope, I guess, from the Number 10 operation is that, yeah, because I've said this all along, these people are not half as smart as they think they are, is that, well, you know, what we'll do is we'll put Wes under pressure and Wes will have to go on record as denier, and then when he does do it, he'll look like a traitor and Keir will win. Not quite, lads, not quite. Because if Wes Streeton has one problem, right, it's public recognition. I'm not saying no one knows who he is, but if you look at the list of recognition, he's relatively low ranking. Now, the media all love him. Media, and you know, I've met him, I've spoken to him, he's a very genial type guy, very easy to get along with. And also one of the reasons the media love him is because he gives like straight answers, interesting, detailed and fluent answers to things. I mean, if you look at the news agents, Jesus Christ, on that podcast, he's almost like the fourth Beatle, isn't he? Or the fifth Beatle. It's John, it's Emily, it's Lewis, it's Wes. So the public might have been in a position where they're going, I've heard of that guy. He's a young guy, health, yeah, can be quite funny, you know, whatever. That might be like roughly where the median view of him is. And they go, oh shit, so what, he's going to take over from Starlight. Well, you know, I might actually pay attention to this bit of the breakfast news, right? What's he got to say, this guy that is bidding to be the new Prime Minister? And what he had to say is, you know, basically he's way warmer, more human, more fluent and funnier than Starmer. Although so saying funnier than Starmer is sort of a bit like saying cheaper than a soup from Pret. and would he be that different on a policy level, Wes Streeting? Maybe not. They must know that, right? Even the backbenchers of Labour just got in and gone, right, I've only got 5 years. Let's fucking spend all the money. Do you know what I mean? Let's introduce new benefits. But this is maybe the most hurtful thing for Starmer. Maybe that they can't be that daft to know what will happen with the gilt markets if they junk and go for a more left-wing agenda at this point. So maybe the most hurtful thing is that the thinking is that, yeah, we get all that and we get that his agenda might be very similar to yours, but the main thing is that he just wouldn't be you. So all of which made it like a very difficult PMQs for Starmer. It started trickily for him, where there was a gag from a talk. You know, yeah, you get like before PMQs, you get a couple of questions, usually one from one of his own MPs that has been a bit of a fluff question, going, can the Prime Minister just confirm for me that breakfast clubs are giving breakfast to breakfast and stuff about breakfast? Yes. So I would like to say that breakfast is breakfast, you know. They go on about that, and then there'll be some Tory backbencher or someone. So this guy, I can't remember his name, but he basically stands up and says that you could tell that he knew he had a decent gag up his sleeve because he was sort of dancing around a bit. But when I was in Sierra Leone, I managed to somehow escape from a bloody coup. If the Prime Minister wants any advice, you know, and everyone had a good chortle, 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 and Starmer kind of laughed through a kind of rictus grin. Naturally, Kemi Badenoch goes at him on that front, right? And I believe him that it didn't come from him? I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, I'm still always hold on to that fact. Remember that really rancid attack ad they did on Rishi? Paul, I miss you. I miss you, Rishi. I'm saying it. I think he was just more across the detail. I said it at the time, didn't I? I said, like, pound for pound, I'd prefer Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister. Just when all the press... I mean, one thing about the press... Sorry, I'll come back to PMQs in a sec. But one thing is that, you know, we saw afterwards, after the election, with people like Andrew Marr and Krishnan Gurumurthy and certain kind of like establishment mainstream journalists, like the way they reacted to a Labour government, go, well, you sort of wanted this. This does suggest that during the campaign, if this was a kind of shared mindset, similar with news agents, you know, certain journalists on radio, that you're kind of like, oh, it's time for a change and it's time for him. And yeah, it was always going to be a Labour government, but they certainly didn't scrutinise him in the way that they should. So, yeah, there was that ad about Rishi Sunak, and do you think paedophiles should be, it was basically, do you think nonces should be allowed to just walk around, do what they want? Rishi Sunak does. And it was like a very aggressive attack ad, and he claimed that wasn't from him. You know, just like the speech about Island of Strangers wasn't from him. If anyone doesn't like anything that he's done, that wasn't me. It wasn't me. He's not fucking Shaggy, isn't he? I did a slightly racist speech. It wasn't me. Briefing against Wes Streeting, it wasn't me. I don't know, something in the way he said it made me think maybe he didn't authorise it. I don't know, it's all language, isn't it? Didn't authorise, didn't not authorise. I don't know, but the problem for him is whether or not, if he didn't, there's no good outcome. Is that he did authorise it and it was incompetent and proves his weakness, or he didn't authorise it and it's incompetent and it proves his weakness. There's no good answer. And he's on the back foot, you know, he's on the back foot. Morgan McSweeney, his name gets mentioned. Da-da-da. McSweeney. So here's the truth. I think Wes Streeting would wannabe leader. I think that he said it in the past. I do think that recently he's tacked left. You know, he described himself as being the kind of entry drug for right wingers into the Labour Party. And just on a few things on race relations, maybe a little bit on puberty blockers, I don't know. There's been a few noises where it's just moved his position a bit. And he's on record in the past as having said that if he wanted to win the Labour leadership, he would tack left. Whether that's how he would govern, I don't know. But he's certainly done things which would make him more likeable and palatable to a membership which maybe has spent a while thinking that he's too right-wing for their tastes. And I think, I think he would be a better leader. He, to me, has the vibe of a leader, you know, like he's competent across his brief. And he can actually talk in this day and age where authenticity matters. If you look at the politicians that are doing well, it's quite simply because when they speak, people broadly believe that they're telling you what they think. And I think, you know, Wes Streeting, while he was out on his manoeuvres, he cracked a couple of gags. Well, not manoeuvres, when he was answering on the morning rounds. What was it? There was a good one about celebrity traitors. This is the worst, like, betrayal of a faithful since Joe Marlowe. Good, you know, his team or whether it comes from him. That's a good thing to say. He's just, you know, what this has done is put him in the shop window. And what it has done with Starmer is make it look like he might not be on political death row yet, but he's certainly awaiting sentencing. And, you know, unless a miracle happens between now and the May elections, I don't know. If I was Starmer, the last throw of the dice might be wage a winnable war. I don't know. Just invade fucking someone, man. I don't know. Who's got it? Malta. Just fucking, hey, you're getting a bit chippy, aren't you? Maltese. Surround them with the Navy. Blockade Malta. I don't know. I've got nothing against Malta. I'm just trying to think that this would do. And then he could do the thing of, you know, like Thatcher, just be sitting on a tank or something like that. Because, yeah, if nothing like radical change, all with the economic news, in concert with what's happened from an operational level this week, it looks really not the end of days. It's not the beginning of the end, but it's you know what I mean. He's up shit creek without a paddle. That is it for this breaking news episode. Listen, could you do us a favour? If you listen to it casually, could you just subscribe? If you go in like your podcast app, it normally there's like a tick in on Apple Podcasts. It's like a little tick to follow or something like that. Spotify, subscribe or Amazon, wherever it is, just subscribe. Because like I know some of you, I can tell from the figures. You just Google it every week, or you wait for my socials and you follow the link. Make your life a better, easier place. Take that one job out. Just subscribe to it. It helps my numbers. Another thing that helps is the reviews, and the ones on Apple are written reviews which I can find and read. So if you, I mean, obviously Spotify really helps, that helped a lot recently actually, so thanks for that, but more of those would help. And also on Apple, the 5-star written reviews I'll read out. It's just one this week. It's from Relly. I don't know if it means a really old person, like a relic. Plenty going on, and please, Jeff brings in all sides of politics so we're not an echo chamber. Should be on Radio 4 comedy slot weekly. Do you remember when old people used to have that voice? Yeah, they'd go out of the voice where they would go like that, you know? It's all that money and all those Viking River cruises. They're a lot more confident these days. Listen, loads of love to the old people. Loads of love to all of you. And I'll see you next week for a main episode.